Raj, it's given that we have you on the line. Can we get another a little bit out of you?
I'm done. I'm gone. I gotta go, lad. Good luck.
Go
talk to you soon. I'm under pressure here. I gotta go to meet.
Okay. Go on. Everyone, welcome to week 4 of the Duncan and Duncan podcast. I think we've given up trying to find a different name now, so we're just going to stick with that. I'm Duncan Casey, here with my co-host, the delightful Duncan Williams. A little later on, we'll be talking to an old teammate of mine, John Quill, and an old housemate of Duncan's, who was involved in the Munster Academy. It didn't work out for him, and he got the opportunity to go and play professionally in the States, pretty much by accident, and he went on to have quite a successful career over in the States, played for the USA team 28 times and played in 2 World Cups, which isn't something that a lot of guys can say. So, Duncan, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
Very well.
Good weekend.
I had a more peaceful weekend than you, I think, by the sounds of it. You had a nice shock to the system in your return to All-Ireland League Rugby.
I did, up in Ballinahinch. It was nearly the end of the world up there. Fairly atrocious conditions, wind, rain, hailstones. I remember we were warming up and the backs were doing their set piece. I looked over and the forwards were covered in behind the hoardings trying to shelter from the...
That makes a change,
yeah,
to be honest.
So that was a bit of a rude way. I was dreading the day after that. I thought I was in for a very long day of the packet and the hiding, but no, we managed to come out with a win, so it was made the trip worthwhile. Had we not won, it would have been... bit of a disaster, right, after making that journey and playing in those conditions, but yeah, glad we got the win.
Well, the trip north from Limerick, thankfully, I think I only did it on a bus once, and I drove it once, but I managed to avoid it, tactically avoid it on every other occasion, but
they got a
Cork
bus.
Cork is even worse.
Yeah,
like,
I didn't drive, so I didn't even get the benefit of the pints on the way home, so it was... Yeah, it was a bit of a stressful weekend, right?
That's why you do it, sure, isn't it?
I love it again. Love it again.
Real authentic experiences. Yeah. Anyway, you had a good win. What did the score finish at?
Was it 16-5? I think we scored just before halftime to make it 10-0. We were playing into the wind now, so it was literally, they kicked off. We had to hold the ball on basically the full length of the pitch constantly for any time we turned it over. It was just... kicked back in behind us, but they made a few mistakes. Anytime they did kick it, they actually kicked it dead quite often. So it was a scrum back from where they kicked it, so that kind of bailed us out a few times. I think we managed it a bit better in the second half. Our kicks were just landing just short of the line or trickling out into touch just before their line, so we weren't really getting punished for kicking the ball like they were. So it was, we managed the game quite well. Managed to hold on to the ball into the wind for as long as we could, and we got an early penalty, and then we managed to get a try just on the stroke at half time.
You made some kind of covert efforts to get the game call at 60 minutes.
Is that legal, is it, to talk about this?
It depends.
No, yeah. So it was about 58 minutes on the clock.
Detail you go into,
and we had a scrum on the right hand side, so we were 13-0 up, I think. So I kind of half jokingly but deadly serious said it to their scrum half, like, you know, if it gets to 60 minutes and it's called off, the score stands, like, so is there, would you fancy calling it, like, you know, we'll let you get a try there for a bonus point, like, which he thought I was joking, but to my own broken heart I was deadly serious, so it was, he didn't take me up on the offer.
I remember, well, this weekend was definitely a weekend. I got out of bed on Saturday morning, I looked out the window and I said, I am delighted, I'm not going outside in that today.
I walked, because actually up there, so if you come out of the dressing room, it's actually quite sheltered till you get past the actual building, like. So I was like, Jesus, isn't too bad, like, and I got just past the building and the wind hit me and I stood there and I was like, what have I done? Why am I still playing these matches, like, I was there, but I actually enjoyed it once we got going, so it was...
It's staying warm is the trick with that, getting warm and staying warm.
We went in at half, so as I said, we scored a try just on the stroke of half time, and then we went in to the dressing rooms for 10-15 minutes, but looking back on it, we should just literally turn around and kicked off and started the second game without any break, because we came back out into the second half and it was absolutely freezing, like, we were we were all shivering. If, I remember Gerry Hurley was taking a kick in the second half. His knees were knocking off each other. He was so cold. He was shivering so much. So it was a bit of an experience. But look, as I said, we won. So happy days.
I remember a lad who I played underage at Munster with, who I actually always thought would turn professional. He played back row for Munster. He was in Prez. He used to play back row and wing. And he said he was playing on the wing in similar enough conditions one time. And he was literally, he was borderline freezing to death. And he was looking at to the subs and the sideline. He's like, what the fuck am I going to do? Like, I can't stay out here. The ball was getting nowhere near him for the whole 80 or 70 minutes as it was. And they said, you need to pace yourself. He said, what? He said, you need to pace yourself if you want to warm up. I'm telling you, this is what you do. So he said he did, and it helped a little bit. But
what's his guy's name?
I will leave the name out of it.
You should have told me this last week, because Sweet was actually playing on the wing for us. So I'm sure with a bit of gentle encouragement, I could have got him to pace himself as well. But
I'm sure a lot of people would have been happy to hear Sweet's made his return to competitive rugby at the weekend as well.
Yeah, it was good to see him back. As most people know, I'm a big fan of Sweets. I think what he brings to the game is a bit different to others. Like, I think he's just this fellow who plays an instinct, and if you try and coach him, it's kind of nearly hinders him. So I think we saw the beauty of that when Razzie was there. I think Razzie just let him off and do his thing, and he was phenomenal that year. Like, I think he was pretty much first choice winger at that point. He's had a few injuries now in the last 12 to 18 months, so it's struggling a bit, but yeah, it was good to see him back. He was playing on the wing, frozen solid. At least he had a shower after the game anyway, so yeah. He's trying to get rid of the nickname Stu, so
Stewie,
it was good to see him in the shower.
I forgot about Stewie, actually, yeah. No, I'm hoping to see him back at Red Jersey a lot.
Yeah, so hopefully that was a game to get him primed and ready for this weekend. I think they have Zebra away, so hopefully see him involved in that.
I think most people know that he played inter-county hurling when he was still in school, but like, he played basketball for Ireland as well, am I right?
Hockey. I don't know if he played basketball, he played hockey, and I think he played underage soccer for Ireland as well, yeah.
Cricket as well?
I don't know.
Probably not a representative level, but he played it, I suppose.
Yeah, so anything he throws his hand at, he's fairly handy.
Yeah, he's one of those.
Just the old table tennis circle as well, to be fair to him. And the darts as well, yeah.
I hate those. Well, it was funny, it was all the stereotypical people that used to hog the dartboards, John Ryan and Kieran Parker. So it's literally like watching live darts, similar frames. Two rotund people squinting their eyes and launching, you know, they were missing with a couple of pints alongside them, but guys get really into it. That used to piss me off a little bit, the people that had hogged the table tennis table.
I used to live with John. We actually had a dartboard at home.
So
we used to be up playing non-stop day and night. Like, it was
Did he ever play with a team? Because Mank,
John?
Yeah.
No.
Mank played competitive darts for a season of darts. Like, he said he'd be going around. So, like, literally the worst pubs in Limerick were all the the venues, like. Yeah. So, but you were allowed to have walk-on music and everything, like. So there'd be this, like, hi-fi, this shitty old hi-fi. It'd be some dive of a pub now. Like, he said there were some real rough places. And you were able to tell them, like, what song you wanted, and connect it up to the old phone or whatever, and then play it. It would be cheered and shit. So he said it was really good crack. He must be quite good. I mean, like, I'm not good at darts, like, but I know from seeing people that would consider themselves to be good at darts that they wouldn't be good enough to be playing in a league.
John was good, to be fair. Keith was very good. Ian Keatley.
Oh, was he? Yeah.
For a man who couldn't even see the dartboard, his eyesight is so bad, but he was actually very good at darts.
Actually, Gigi was freakishly good.
Was he?
He used to leather the darts at the board. Yeah. See, long arms are a big help with that, because you can lean in, and he's basically his arms are kind of Dunner's Ryan kind of type arms down past his knees.
Yeah, a lot of darts players use their belly to balance themselves. That's why John Ryan was so good.
I did find it hilarious that it was the props, the two tight ends that were up there the whole time after training for hours.
Yeah.
Anyway, we digress.
No, John went straight home to his wife and child. Yeah, he wasn't playing darts all day, every day.
Definitely, he was definitely getting treatment and had meetings and everything else. Yeah. So moving on from darts, post-training darts, kind of one thing that came up in the last week that has really pissed me off, and that maybe a lot of people wouldn't have heard of, but actually affects...
I'd say more than really.
A lot of people wouldn't have heard of, and despite the fact that it affects kind of a lot of the Irish community playing rugby professionally outside of Ireland, is the news that the RFU in England have decided to cut funding to the championship by £3 million, or about 50%. from next season onwards. So how it works at the moment is each team in the championship, I'm not sure if it's means tested, I'm not sure if the likes of Ealing, say, would get it. But for teams that need it, it's a £550,000 payment that they get each year as basically a subsidy. Okay. And a lot of these clubs are operating with heads barely above water. So there's obviously been a lot of backlash to this. It's estimated that maybe 200 players that are currently contracted will end up without clubs. And I think it's just a really sad development and a really strange decision. I mean, it's almost been more or less universally condemned by people outside of the RFU inner circle. Huge number of professional players, current internationals giving out about it, and understandably so. But there's a very big Irish contingent that have over the years and continue to ply their trade in England. And another subject has come up here a few times about how difficult it is for Irish guys to kind of give rugby a second chance if they don't quite make the grade at their province, by nature of the fact that there are only four teams. Like, basically, if you're a Leinster player and you're not quite good enough, if you come through an academy system, you could probably go to one of the other three provinces. If you're with Munster, there's the potential you might get a shot at Ulster, Connacht, and similarly with Ulster. There's very rarely guys that don't make the grade at Connacht that move on to other provinces.
We used to play a good few of the teams in the BNI Cup. Whatever, some good teams, tough trips, like the Cornish Pirates, Rotherham, Nottingham, we played a few times. You know, they were hard games. You know, I think it was good for us. Like, we were fairly young playing that BNI Cup, and I think, you know, it kind of gave us a good experience. I know that's not what you're saying, but it actually is quite a good standard, and it was maybe that bit better than AIL and just below kind of Pro 14. So it was good experience for us. So.
Absolutely, but that's the thing. Like, I remember when Ian Costello went over to Nottingham, which would have been 2015, I think, end of 2014-15 season.
Yeah.
He went over to take the head job at Nottingham, and I remember him saying, I think if I recall correctly, that Nottingham's playing budget was £400,000 for the entire squad. So that's like 35-40 players, however many, whatever you want to split it. And roughly, you're looking at a £250,000-£275,000 cut in each club's budget now. So essentially their playing budget is being completely wiped out. So you have to wonder how sustainable it will be, even if guys are able to be kept on retainer, on really basic retainers, how sustainable it will be. And it's just really sad to see that it's another avenue being cut off for rugby players everywhere, but particularly Irish players who, as I said, are kind of already up against it in terms of the opportunities that they have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the RFU are short of money here. Like, match fees paid per international game for the English 23 or £25,000 sterling. That's win, lose, or draw per game. So I was doing some maths. I'm not a mathematician by any means, but if that was £18,000 per game over the course of a Six Nations, that'd be £805,000 sterling that'd be saved. Another six games on top of that between your three summer tests, your three November tests, that's another 966. So that's £1.8 million that you're saving already. I mean, getting your match fees cut £25,000 to £18,000 win, lose, or draw on top of fairly big contracts anyway to begin with. I'm sure there will be some opposition to it, but I think in terms of the greater good, it'd be hard to argue with something like that. Barry White wrote a piece in the Sunday Business Post. I think I'm allowed to say that because it's not a direct competitor. I've got the sports editor here casting an eye on me next in the seat next to me currently. But he wrote a very good piece about the privatisation of rugby and kind of private money that's pouring into rugby at the moment. And he actually referenced a couple of figures. He said that in the last 5 years, sponsorship revenues alone for the IRFU have risen by 12% to £32.8 million per year. And additionally, there was a 21% growth in broadcasting revenue to £49.7 million last year. So the RFU aren't by any means strapped for cash. And I think a £3 million cut, the fact that it will have such a devastating impact on so many people that are applying their trades in that second tier is just really inexplicable, to be honest. A lot of guys are kind of barely touching minimum wage that are playing in a lot of championship clubs. So if you're in a club that's already struggling and you're, as I said, you're getting your playing budget slashed by maybe 75%, I mean, you have to wonder.
It's pretty much going from pro to semi-pro, really, is it?
Yeah, like I remember a few years ago hearing that there were only about six teams in the championship that were kind of operating as fully professional outfits, and that the rest were kind of hanging on for dear life. And I'm like, it's hard to see it's hard to see where it's going to come from now, to be honest. Potentially they roll back on it because they mightn't have foreseen the kind of backlash that they're getting at the moment, but it's quite disappointing. And there's a lot of Irish guys who've gone there and have
as
come
said,
back.
Yeah, it was a good outlet for lads who maybe
absolutely well sure you
need maybe just get another year or two of fresh rugby and then get picked up somewhere else. Or
well, you lived with Sean Dougal for a couple of years. Dougs, things didn't work out with him at Ulster for various reasons, predominantly injuries, but he went over to Rotherham, got player of the championship during his time at Rotherham, came back, played a lot of rugby for Munster and went over and...
games
there for Munster. That's right, yeah, and went over and has had a terrific career in France and is still playing there. Guy like Robin Copeland... He was playing club rugby because
Mary's.
That's right, and he got the opportunity to go. Did he go to Plymouth or Rotherham first? It was Plymouth, wasn't it? He tells a funny story about where he was living. So essentially, there was like a galvanized shed constructed onto the side of the clubhouse at the grounds, and they used to stick kind of four of the lads in there, and he was living in there. So I think he was 22. It's kind of one of those
in Plymouth.
In Plymouth, yeah.
I think, actually, no, yeah, we played there a few times.
Yeah, I've played there before.
Yeah. It's actually not a bad little town. It's a big navy town, isn't it?
It's on the sea. It's kind of considered a bit of a kip, I think, by other English people.
You had a fine night out there, didn't you?
I did. Plymouth is a good night out. But it's got a naval base, and it's in the southwest, so the weather is a lot better than you'd get kind of in the Midlands or anything like that, but I don't think it's considered to be
terribly... We went for a fine walk for recovery after the match.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd have won too many Jägermeisters, you were a bit worse for wear.
I don't think I was the only guy that was worse for wear.
You couldn't get over the value of them.
Yeah, that's right. £2 Jager bombs or something like that. So Copy... went to Rotherham from there, then went to Cardiff and really tore things up at Cardiff and was brought back to Munster and has been playing professionally in Ireland since then. He's been capped for Ireland. Again, another guy that, you know, if he hadn't gotten that opportunity, he'd probably just still be playing club rugby if he hadn't gotten a foot in the door at Leinster. A lot of guys have gone over and carved out pretty decent careers for themselves. They're doing it long enough that they seem happy enough doing it. Guys move into player coaching and then ultimately into coaching. I don't know, it never really appealed to me a whole pile. I think you really need to want it to go over and do your time in the championship.
Thing, if you really want to keep playing the top level and you have to go there, the theory is just go there for a year or two and try and get back out there. And if you don't, I think it's just you've either stayed there and... continue to enjoy your rugby, but for people who use it as a stepping stone, it's kind of, you need to give it a year or two and then hopefully you get out of there, but it can be quite tough beyond that then, I think, if you don't get out.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's why, like, I would have thought that, but certain guys just go there and seem to really enjoy it.
Shannon Scanlon never actually, I always thought he there was a spot from there once, so, you know, I thought he was always a good player. He made his debut that Christmas against Connacht, didn't he? He got a try. Played very well, and I don't know that he'd play again after that, but you know, he was always one of these lads who trained very well, looked the part, was always in great shape, did have a few injuries, but...
Yeah, that's right, he was really promising, he had a bad back issue, obviously cost him a few months, and like...
That was it, actually.
He had to have an epidural, I think, on a disc problem. He obviously made a full recovery and has played for years after that, but... just one of those things. But as I was saying, like, had it not been for championship rugby, maybe he wouldn't have gotten the chance to play professionally ever again. And now he's gone over, he's going to forge a life for himself over there. He's, I presume, looking at progressing into coaching full time. All those opportunities have the potential to dry right up in next season. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I was watching my old stamping ground, or my old team playing my old stamping ground, FC Grenoble against Perpignan.
Oh yeah, you were saying
on
this.
Thursday night, so a very enjoyable game. There's this real kind of interesting bit of rivalry that's developed over the last couple of years there. So basically, when I came over first, it was Perpignan were finished top of the second division, and we ended up getting hammered by them in the final and winning the playoff game. So, and after that game, there's this really, really kind of oddly shaped prop that plays Lucid for them. This is a kind of guy that's been there for years. He kind of looks like Tony Soprano, but shorter and kind of a bit rounder in the middle. And he goes for 80 minutes routinely now. He's actually a really good player. Fronts up, carries loads of ball, really powerful scrummager as well. But like the Catalan people in general are kind of quite hot-headed, and they're not the most popular in other parts of France. So we were getting the bus. We were playing in Toulouse Stadium. We were getting the bus in, and it's like hundreds of people around waiting for the bus. They're all throwing bottles at the bus and like kind of borderline kind of trying to rock the thing over. So you'd be loving it, obviously, as a player. But once you get down, they're just roaring abuse at you constantly because Toulouse is down south, it's far closer to Perpignan than Grenoble was. So the stadium was basically 80% Perpignan fans.
Where are you playing
now? It's just neutral venue for the final.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So about 80% Perpignan fans. And we were getting thumped. And for a finish, like their fans started running, like climbing over into where the dugout were and kind of waving flags in our faces and stuff like that. And stewards, there was hundreds of stewards around, all staring up at the sky, not doing a thing, lying in the tunnel. So there was guys getting physical with them, like grabbing lads by the throat and throwing them away and all that kind of jazz. And but like they're a rough enough bunch, a temperamental old bunch. So one of the guys who was the main subject of abuse was a prop that was playing for us, who basically, when they got relegated in France, unless you've got something written into your contract, if you get relegated, the club ordinarily will try and completely screw you out of your money.
Okay.
So they got relegated, and the president basically came to him and said, "We're cutting your salary by 60%, okay?" And he's like, "No, I have a contract." So what happened then was, he said, "Okay, look, we can't pay you. Go if you go and find yourself another club, then we let you go." So he got a trial with Racing, and basically the president arranged for photographs of him up on trial and Racing to be released into kind of local media. President came out and said, "Oh, look at this guy. He's abandoning us now that we've gone down to the second division. We want him to stay. We've promised that we've offered him the sun, moon and the stars, and he won't. He's disrespecting us." So he was up in Paris at the time, but they're absolute lunatics down there. So in his house, like his family, his wife and his kids were in the house, and there was people like coming to his house at night and throwing stones at the windows and stuff like that. He had to ring his agent, and the agent basically had to evacuate the family to a hotel while the whole thing was happening. So they're kind of not the most popular bunch, but it makes for a good rivalry anyway, because obviously we came up and we were the two teams tipped to go down, so we're kind of vying for that 13th spot. Not that it was much good to us for a finish. Anyway, after the game, Forletta, who I was talking about, there was a video of him going around in the car park. Basically, they sing this song in French, and it's like you insert the name of the team or whatever, but it basically means, it was like Grenoble, the shield, as in like the trophy that we were playing for. They can watch it on the TV. So there's this video of him going around the internet singing this in the car park, and all the Perpignan fans going mental. So that was being played for the whole week of the lead up to the game, like the first fixture of the following season. And neither of us had won a game at that point. We were probably like 6 or 7 games in. And it was quite a grudge match, and there was a good bit of bite to it. But he got his comeuppance anyway. We destroyed him at scrum time, and we got our victory.
I always like to hear that, an old underdog story.
Yeah. But no, it was good to see them. Grenoble's the kind of a team that there's turnover of 17 or 18 people per year, so it was good to see them, to see a lot of the same faces there, but I'm sure most of them will be gone now next year, regardless of what happens.
It's an unbelievable stadium in Grenoble there, the backdrop, the mountains and the...
It is, it's pretty special.
I love to play there.
It's quite unusual, yeah. So that was built as a football stadium originally.
Okay.
So the football stadium, I think, got up to League One, but I think they were owned by Asian investors, and they just pulled the plug and they fell down the divisions, down to fourth division, I think, so they couldn't actually afford to keep the stadium. So the city bought the stadium, and you still allowed the two teams to use it. So yeah, so it's a bit shitty for the football lads. I actually saw on Twitter they were playing like the following afternoon, so it was a 9 o'clock kickoff. Obviously, 80 minutes of rugby plus warm ups, and then the football team went out to play then the following day. But it is really nice. So they're coming second in the league at the moment. So it was good to see. I was trying to find a stream, all legal, of course, all above board for Biarritz versus Van.
Nothing illegal or controversial on this show.
So Munster obviously had a great win at the weekend. Did you see it?
I saw about 30 minutes of it. I was travelling to Dublin, so I didn't actually see the full game, but it was good to see John Haddon get a run. The West Cork Mafia are growing stronger and stronger by the week.
Was he West Cork? Is he Bantry?
Yeah, Ross Carberry.
Ah, right. Even kind of more unusual again.
Yeah, so it's a right hub down in West Cork at the moment. So it was good to see him make his debut and get man the match. So the Shermanator came on, Ben Healy. So getting quite aggressive with his touch finders. Nice spirals, reeling in the ears there. You don't see many people kicking spirals to touch anymore. So it was good to see him get on and get a good bit of game time. Obviously Keenan Knox is on the bench because the rooster Stephen Archer is still out with the goat that got him on the week off.
He's recovering from his goat. Prop needs to be able to enjoy a good living from time to time. I think everyone's entitled to a bout.
He spends his week fighting it off every week. It just finally gets him then on the week off because he's doing no training. But it was good. I think it was the record win, was it, for Munster, or most tries or something?
Is that right? Was it 65-3? Is it
so
finished?
10 tries, isn't it? Yeah. Tries, so yeah. It was.
It was really impressive. John Haddon was excellent. I mean, a guy, he's 21 years old, he's getting a start at top level rugby. All you kind of really want from a guy like that is to put himself about and just get involved and not be a passenger. And he certainly got involved. He was everywhere, really. He was turning up on inside passes. He was all over the place, really.
And I saw a lot of him in the 20s last year. He was very good. I thought he was probably one of the standout performers there for that 20s team. I just think, you know, for a fellow who doesn't look like a big man, he's a great ball carrier, always gets over the gain line, looks nice, compact and powerful, and I was very impressed by him.
Yeah, I think physically, not that he has a bit to go, but I think he can add more to himself physically with the fact that he's so powerful and so effective already at 21 years of age in a position like 7, I think is a really good omen for things. Hopefully now he'll get another crack or two before the end of the season and he'll get another chance to build on that, because, I mean, starting like that, the confidence that can give you as a young guy is really not to be underestimated.
Dave Zebra away next week, is it? Over there, so I'd like to hopefully see a few more selections like that. Maybe Jack O'Sullivan, Craig Casey, a few of those lads get another run as well. And so it's a good learning experience. That those away games in Italy can be quite tough. Do you ever remember our daunting trips to Treviso that turned into the All Blacks anytime we went over there, and we're like playing unbelievable rugby, offloading everything. Next thing we know, we're 4 tries down and losing by 28 points. Oh, Jesus, here we go again.
I only was in Treviso once at Munster. That was...
Cost many men a career, that old Treviso trip.
Yeah, it did actually, didn't it? I thought that trip that I did with Munster was bad, but then as I've referenced several times already in the last number of weeks, that 13-hour bus journey for the Challenge Cup match that nobody cared about. We got 40...
They're tough games, those away, particularly in Italy, so... Get a good insight into how these lads are sorted for some tough games coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always kind of a volatile period because those games have often fallen in that Six Nations period for Munster. And I mean, as you say, it's not to be underestimated. I think at least the Pro 14 is something that's going to be targeted very much. So I think the chances of a slip up, kind of with one eye being on a quarter final or a semi final, are less likely this time of the year.
Rumour has it Brendan Williams has come out of retirement and signed for Zebra as well, so he'll be tormenting Stephen Archer in his dreams again.
What was that about?
Do you remember him? He was playing at Treviso.
I remember him, yeah.
Do you remember every time? Lads, don't get isolated with this fella. Don't kick the ball to him. Every time we kick the ball to him, everyone would get isolated. He'd be sidestepping lads. But do you remember the famous picture of Archer trying to tackle him? So he's like trying to dive right, but Brendan Williams has actually gone the other way. It's like his knees buckled and everything. But he was causing awful trouble every time we played against him. But the best thing was apparently he was on the missing list for days upon days.
Oh, is that right?
And they wouldn't even know if he was going to turn up for a match. He'd rock into the dressing room and score 4 tries against us, tear us asunder.
He was an impressive fellow, right? Yeah. He was well able to do damage. So, well, Munster were really good. I thought it was really encouraging to see them throwing the ball around the way they did. They were just taking chances.
Got a bit loose towards the end, but I think you're that far up. That's bound to happen.
I was a bit shocked by how bad the Kings were, though. They were really, really awful. That out half with the long hair and the scrum gap, it was like he was deliberately lining guys up to get creamed all day, like passing way off the line, like big floaty over skip passes. Yeah. I mean, there was one time, I think it was on first phase off a scrum, Chris Farrell came up and he actually hit the guy before the ball came to him.
So loud.
He actually, the ball just kind of happened to land on top of the two of them. And, but yeah, I mean, God, it's tough going. I mean, to come to a place like that anyway, you need to try and get a foothold in the game. But I was really disappointed with how poor they were. Not a good outing for Jerry Sexton.
Yeah, but I saw Ospreys beat Ulster as well. That must be a bit disappointing for Ulster, considering they were going quite well.
Yeah, well, who's looking after Ospreys at the moment?
It's Neil Ruddock. Mike Ruddock, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, to be fair, he's the kind of guy you'd expect to turn things around a little bit.
To think Ulster were on a bit of a winning streak and Ospreys haven't exactly been performing quite well. You would have fancied them to do a job on them.
Yeah, I saw Andy Powell trying to throw his name into the hat for a gig with the Ospreys.
Did he?
Well, it was around the time, it was when things were at their worst a few weeks back, and I saw on Twitter he was saying, I'd be delighted to come on board with the Ospreys. I think I can
coach impart, or player?
As a coach, yeah. Okay. I said, I think I command a lot of respect, and I think I have a lot of,
he never struck me as a master tactician, as a rugby player.
I saw an ad for something on BBC Wales, I think a documentary about him where they go to wherever he's from, basically, and it looks really good. I've always liked him.
Dunner sends a great story, Donnacho Callan, about him and the Lions tour. So they were obviously meeting at a certain place when they were finally leaving to get on the flight, like to go to South Africa, was it? And the bus was delayed, like there's none of the Welsh contingent there, and everyone's like, where are all the Welsh lads? Like, and they finally rocked up about 15, 20 minutes late, like, and all the Welsh lads were getting on. Jesus, Pauly, like, what was the story? He was wailing, crying, saying goodbye to his mother for like 20 minutes, and she'd made them all pack lunches there for a trip. Like, he was like, I'll call you tonight, Mum. I love you, all this. Like, he hadn't even got on the bus at this point. Like, but it was, Donner tells a great story about it.
I heard another one about him and his man were driving home in a van, I think. And,
golf character van?
No, it was a van this time. But they're having a row about something, and I think he kicked out at the dashboard and the windscreen came off. So, like, they obviously couldn't put it back in, you know, it was broken or whatever, so they threw it into the boot. And just, he has a lot of tradie equipment, so he had these welding goggles. So the two of them had to put on welding goggles for the rest of the drive home. So I'd love to meet him. He seems like an incredible character. Yeah. I'd love to, sure. We might convince him to fly to Cork sometime anyway. Promise him a good weekend.
He's thrown his hat in the ring for many things. He might throw it in for this.
Hard hitting, sometimes brutal. Brilliant at the breakdown and never afraid to tackle the big names. Read Ronan O'Gara, Simon Lewis and me, Donal Lenehan, in the Irish Examiner for the best insights and analysis on all the key matches throughout the Six Nations Championship. The 2020 Six Nations in the Irish Examiner. We've got every position covered.
So we're joined in the studio now by my old Munster 19s and 20s colleague and retired USA international, John Quill from Yall. John, pleasure to have you. Good to see you.
Good to be here. How are you doing, lads?
I didn't realise until Dunk said last week, but you actually lived together a few years ago, which I was kind of going, oh, do you know John Quill?
I was living with a Yall contingent, right? John and Dave O'Callaghan. John Ryan and Sean Dougal, the five of us in a house up in Garry Duff.
Yeah, grand little spot as well. Yeah,
it was lovely.
Was that the country house?
Yeah,
place,
yeah.
Was it? Yeah.
The premier house, yeah.
I dipped in there for a minute into the mansion, but yeah.
So, John, maybe people in the Irish rugby circle, a lot of them wouldn't know a whole pile about you, but you've played 37 games of Test rugby for the USA. You've played in two World Cups. I remember we played 19s and 20s together, obviously, as I just said, and we spent a bit of time in the sub-academy together, and you were released from Munster in 2012,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
So this is something that is kind of a bit of a bugbearer of mine when you compare Ireland to the likes of England and France. If you don't quite make the grade at academy level, or even if you're in an academy and you don't get a senior contract on the back of it, if you're in France or England, you have a heap of opportunities to go and have a second crack at it elsewhere, whereas in Ireland there's four teams and that's it. So when you found out you were kind of surplus to requirements at Munster, what was your thought process? Were you still saying, I want to play professional rugby?
Actually, no, not really. As you said, yeah, it's very competitive at my year as well. As you mentioned, Dave O'Callaghan, Peter O'Mahony, Tommy O'Donnell, and all those boys just ahead of me. So it was a very competitive position as well at the time. And after just finishing college and being in that system, it's a lot. You're training early, you're training often, you're training with a couple of your club and the academy, and if you're lucky, you're in with the seniors then as well. And days up in Limerick. So it's intense, and on the back of it I was fed up, to be honest. And I was lucky enough, I have an American passport from my mom, She was born and raised in Staten Island, New York, and I decided to move over to Boston for a year with my now wife to get away from rugby. I was in the country 3 days, and I got a trial with the national team.
I didn't realise that at all. I thought you had gone over specifically to play rugby. I didn't realise it was...
No, I did the year before. I send over some tape to Eddie O'Sullivan. I was the head coach just before that World Cup. Would have been 2011? No,
2015?
No, no, I was 13, sorry, yeah. And sent over some tape, and unfortunately didn't make that trip. But on the back of that, as is the case with most countries, they kind of give a lot of guys opportunities, whether it be from guys retiring on the back of World Cups or whatever. I got my opportunity very quickly and got my first cap. I think I was only in the country a month or two, and got my first cap on the November series. We actually played in Colwyn Bay in Wales. The armpit of Wales, also known as. I hope nothing ever brings me back to that place. But yeah, I played Russia and got my first cap, and that was the start of a strange, exciting adventure, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I mean, 37 games of test rugby. Like, I played 46 games for Munster over the course of, I was going to say 4.5 years, it was really 3 years. I didn't set foot in the pitch for the last 18 months, but that's a very significant achievement for anyone to play 37 games of test rugby, and particularly for a guy that went over not really planning or were there any expectations. So had you signed with an amateur team then?
No,
at that stage?
There was no signing at that time. Okay. It was as amateur as it gets. It was literally train a couple nights a week, wait for a soccer team to get off the pitch, and a hockey team and a baseball team. You're way down the list of priorities in terms of sports in the US, especially in 2012. And you might be running out there at 8:30 in the evening and do your thing, probably go to a bar afterwards, grab some chicken wings and watch some football on Thursday night with a brewski or two. And then play at the weekend on some park.
Right.
I only played a few times with them. It was Boston Rugby Club at the time. But yeah, I really enjoyed my time there in Boston, great city. And then I was meant to be there a year, but I kind of headed home after 9 months.
Did you sign for London Welsh after that, was it?
Yeah, so I was came back, finished AIL season with Dolphin, and then on the back of that, the next season, then
speaking
went
of armpits,
and then went to London Welsh the following season. Yeah, that's why I came home early. Actually, left the missus in Boston for the last couple of months, so I could get some game time with Dolphin before going to Welsh.
Okay, and then you. London Welsh got promoted that season.
We helped win the champ and then promotion, and that was all I was needed for.
They offloaded the bulk of the squad at that
20,
point.
Yeah,
it was very whoopoo, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Ferry came in, did great things, in fairness to him. me and 24 other guys weren't needed the following season. So
is that right? So there's 25 offloaders?
Yeah, I think that was what it was.
That's pretty cutthroat.
Yeah, and only kind of found out last minute, so I was kind of left without a club going into the following season. So I was back at the armpit, otherwise known as Dolphin. But it was a good team back then, and I always enjoyed playing with Dolphin.
And then when did the chance come up to go and play professionally in the States?
So that was after the 2015 World Cup. I went back over, I was living in New York, I had to get a surgery, and then played a few games with NIAC, New York Athletic Club, in the run-up to the 2015 World Cup. And that's when, just following that, then they started professional rugby in the US, where I've been for the last 4 years playing.
It's really interesting, like, you're obviously going over as just an immigrant who's working, essentially, and you're playing a bit of ball, but you're you're playing for the national side mm-hmm. in a country of however a couple of hundred million people. Mm-hmm. You're representing that number of people, but you're just going to work every day. It's a little bit like the GAA lads here representing their counties after. Half of them wonder how they could do it, like, because in it must have been
love
difficult.
Of the game, Dunk. Love of the game.
it was the love of the game. There wasn't a whole lot of perks came with it either. But yeah, it was tough going. There was a lot of guys playing abroad in France, UK, and we had the likes of Samu Manoa, Todd Clever, all those, Chris Wiles. There's a load of them playing elsewhere. There was only a couple coming in actually from the US, playing in the US at the time. But that's all changed. There's anyone that's in a squad now for the US team are playing full-time professional rugby, whether it be in the US or abroad.
So the kind of there's been a few attempts at the setting up of professional leagues in the States over the years. So it was the pro league that you would have signed for first. That was for this with the Sacramento team.
Yeah, yeah, Sacramento Express.
that was your nickname or the name of the
that
name?
Was the name they gave. Yeah,
it would be a good nickname for a player as well. Actually.
Fat
Dwarf. It's called.
I know, Swampy, no?
Swampy Tits. Yeah. He's forgotten about that actually. Jeez, that brings me back.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, at that point, there's a bit of excitement, particularly for guys like you who you've had exposure to professional teams in a country with really high standards like Ireland. You've been slogging away for a while. This is finally my chance to play professional rugby.
Yeah, well, it was because I actually retired on the back of the last World Cup as well. Maybe this one will stick, we'll see. but I retired internationally just because of frustrations actually with the last World Cup. The 2015 one.
What kind of frustrations?
A little bit of selection, but more the way it was amateur, more than it needed to be at that time. We had a quality squad and didn't feel like we really had a game plan that we could use to be successful. A bunch of stuff like that. They were going cheap on everything. You said off air there about travel days you guys had. We had some of the worst, like 32-hour travel days back from Japan, flying here, there, and everywhere just to save a few bucks. So there was frustrations in terms of that. But my missus actually said, I've been kind of following you around for this rugby thing for a while. I mentioned there about how she had to hang back in the US there in 2012. So she kind of put her foot down, I suppose, in a ways and said, I'd like to live in the US for a while. So I didn't see anything wrong with that. Let's give it a go. And we did. And great decision, actually, in the end of the day, because it was a fantastic experience. And I get to see kind of where the game is growing, kind of, because it was fairly raw when I went over in 2013. It was a one-owner league. Doug Scherzing was his name, and he pretty much came up in his head for six cities. Was it six?
Yeah, it was six, I think.
It's cities. Like a few big names, isn't it? Like Mully, you know, went there, Pedri Vandenberg.
Yeah, he did. He picked up a few names, and I think those guys were some of the few guys that actually got paid.
Is that right? Were there issues of getting paid and
there
everything?
There was a lot of issues.
I remember at the time the chat, because I was really excited about it, because I think most people that are involved in rugby in Europe kind of worry that if the US ever got its shit together with rugby, that they'd be an unstoppable force just by nature of the population.
There's also another chance to get a contract over there as well.
Exactly.
That's the real reason. Don't let that
eat around the bush. Things were very much on the slide in Munster, so I was eyeing up a contract elsewhere as well, so I wanted as many options as I could get. But I remember the chat was that he'd agreed to bankroll it for 5 years, I think, or something like that, and then after 1 year
he realised, hang on here, why is the stands empty, and why is this costing me so much money to run six teams in the US? It was kind of absurd, to be honest, that he thought it would work out. As badly as he did it, it was one of the best things that could have happened to rugby in the US, because everyone kind of took a step back and realized, oh shit, like if we don't do this, someone else is going to do it. And it's going to happen quickly. So yeah, his league, it was a lot of large Polynesians whacking the shit out of the rest of us.
I met a few over in the Free Jacks last year. Yeah,
it was massive men
cleaning lads out. It was, as I said, off air, I went to the ref at one point, so we have to walk off if this continues. Like, it was just mayhem.
Yeah.
I remember Luke Masters nearly got his head literally got decapitated. Conor Oliver nearly got his head scrunched into his chest and everything. It was bloody outrageous.
Yeah, no, it is pretty loose. Like, it was pretty loose. The refing left a lot to be desired. But
So Sacramento, you had Sacramento, that league got disbanded, but happily enough, the MLR, people might be familiar with the MLS, so it's the same organization, is that right?
No, it's its own organization, okay. But it's actually run by the ex-head of the MLS, so it's the same template they're using, and it's all the clubs are owned by their investors, so right. It's not one guy owns it all, it's very much investor run league, which is a good thing and a bad thing, because they kind of determine salary caps and stuff like that, and I'm not sure how well salary caps are governed in certain, I won't get into that, but but yeah, no, it's there's a lot of the clubs that have a background there, they have a culture already with them, they have a club and a history to them already, whereas before he just kind of picked a couple of places he wanted for his franchises. Cities, yeah. Okay. Like so San Francisco, where that's just not a good idea. But I guess a lot of people might say the same from New York. I mean, they're making it work.
Or Limerick. So, but it's kind of different. It's not what people would understand fully professional rugby to be, because you're not contracted for 12 months of the year. So you're contracted for essentially, what was it, 6 or 7 months?
Yeah, it's growing every year because there's new team. Like it was 8 teams when it started 2 years. This is year 3, which is starting up next week.
Is there Toronto,
are they going to do? Toronto are in it. It's Atlanta.
And the Free Jacks are new, aren't they? The Free Jacks. Yeah. Boston, yeah.
Yeah. And then next year they're looking at Vegas. There's a couple of games in Vegas this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
We clamor at the agents' phones.
We're back. We're back, Doug.
So yeah, so what's that like? You essentially have to go and find work then for the months of the year that you're not getting money from rugby, is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. For a lot of guys, there's a lot of the clubs are helping guys out, so they've very few hours in season, and then they kick back into it in the off season, which is great, to be honest, because it kind of sets you up after rugby. Even though you don't have a choice to do it, you got to do it, but it puts you in a pretty good position, and that was the case with me with baking. I baked on the side. I go in.
So you did that while you were in the States?
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. Okay. For the 2 years I was in Colorado, I did that. Couldn't really manage it in New York with travel times and stuff like that. So it was just the rugby there, but
because you come from a baking background.
My dad is 4th generation, I'm looking to be the 5th. So that was something I actually wanted to try. It wasn't really on my radar until I actually was forced to do it by necessity through semi-professional rugby.
But, is that right? So did you have a choice in terms of what work you did there? Or were you
They have, obviously clubs have different contacts depending on where you are in the country, but I said I wanted to give baking a go. I'd done it growing up, but it wasn't something I really considered as a career until quite recently. But yeah, did it and love it, and can't wait to do it forever.
Demanding, I'd say, though, as well, like early starts, that kind of thing. If the only, like, I suppose bakeries aren't that common in Ireland anymore.
Ironically, these baked goods never made it up to the house I was sharing with them, as far as I can remember.
No, I wasn't making them at the time.
Jesus.
Early starts. That was kind of a good thing in a way with rugby over there, because I was mostly doing this. Yeah, we a lot of clubs do kind of a long pre-season just to keep guys employed through rugby, but the wage isn't what it normally is for your normal league. But so I was going in at about 3:30 or 4 a.m. and working till 8 and in the gym then for 8:30, gym session, skill session, whatever it is in the morning, home and nap then, and evening session then with the
so you're at 3:30 a.m. start, and then you're doing your evening session at what time?
It was kind of 6:30-ish, because you have to do that because there's a lot of guys that are part timers, like, have maybe, depending on different clubs, you'd have 15 to 22 guys would be full timers, and then the rest would make up the part timers.
I find it fascinating because I had no concept of that before I went to France, and obviously in France there's a lot of Pacific Island guys, mm-hmm. either guys that have come straight from the islands or guys who emigrated at some point to New Zealand and have come from there, particularly guys that come as injury cover during the year, mm-hmm. because Mitre 10 Cup essentially is the provincial competition in New Zealand, and that runs for the contracts run for 6 months of the year, kind of similar enough to what the format is in the States, or at least was previously.
Yeah.
So they get very badly exploited because if they come on injury cover, they get paid peanuts for that, but they just take it as an opportunity to get up and to get up to France and get a foot in the door.
Sure.
But when it comes to the end of that period, like often they would come up and do quite well because they're used to playing at a very high standard, even if they haven't played Super Rugby or anything like that. The standard is just so high in New Zealand anyway that they slot quite comfortably in. But the clubs know that essentially it's a choice between accepting whatever terrible offer that they get, and being able to move the family to France, getting a foot in the door in Europe and playing full-time professional rugby, or going back to play Mitre 10 and essentially working shifts in a factory, or a couple of the guys were delivery men. You're essentially going back to do hard manual work for 6 months of the year. So that's actually, it's an issue we might touch on in another episode in more depth, Duncan, because it really pissed me off when I came across it, just hearing the offers that guys would get, like essentially minimum wage offers to come up from, to spend 30 hours on a plane, bring their families up and get paid minimum wage to play.
They pay, throw loads of money at the foreigners and then shaft it. Peanuts.
But it's interesting that Irish people have had that same experience of going to the States, and like you mentioned, obviously the way that you've gotten to see the game grow a lot from like a very low point in terms of professionalism to a point where it's getting a lot of traction internationally now.
It is, it has been very enjoyable seeing that evolution.
And a huge number of Irish guys coming over to play now as well.
Huge, yeah. I mean, especially in New York there, we had in our 15, out of the starting 15, we had 10 or 11 Irish playing.
All right, I didn't realise it was that high, actually.
Yeah, I was actually, over Christmas, I went up to Dublin to meet up with a few, and there was 6 or 7 of us on a night out in Dublin that played for New York. They're definitely picking up a few boys and bringing them over. It's a great opportunity, I think.
Evan Minturn from Cannes.
Yeah.
He's gone over there.
There's a couple of Cannes boys gone over, I think.
Yeah. There'd be upwards of 20 guys playing in the league, definitely, would there?
I would say so.
It's terrific to see guys that maybe would have played Irish 20s, would have been on radars, but just like yourself, just didn't get the opportunity with the province. It's great that there's another avenue now.
Absolutely.
Particularly given the fact that obviously there's a huge Irish connection all over the States, but the New York team is actually owned by a guy from Newport, County Tipperary.
James Kennedy. James is an interesting character.
I got an Instagram message off Monday. May or June. He's like, can I give you a call? And I was like, yes, here's my number. Of course, phone call never came. That's my number there if you really want to ring me.
His story is quite cool. He was just an immigrant into the States, and was it through construction?
And yeah, this is kind of his baby now, and he's definitely invested a lot of emotion into it.
Is there another guy called James English, actually?
James English is the he was the manager, general manager.
I read an interview with James Kennedy recently, where he said that the Pro 14 actually approached him before he set up the New York franchise to set up a team and
I heard that for the Pro 14.
But he said that so they essentially wanted it to be kind of a fifth province, so it would be the main function of it would be somewhere for Irish guys to go. Now, it's obviously kind of ended up being that by default, but he said that Americans wouldn't come to watch something that didn't have a bit of local attachment to it.
Oh yeah, very much so. that's the big thing right now, is trying to get people out to games, and it's trying to get that connection with some part of your area that the club is in. That was what I was talking about earlier, in terms of these clubs have some sort of a history behind them now. They're not just plonked in a city that never had rugby before. It's generally they're developing something that's already been there. And it's working. In terms of, like, last year we played San Diego in the semi-final in San Diego's packed stadium. Not a very big stadium, but packed. Yeah. Atmosphere was unbelievable. And there's a few different places. Seattle have that same atmosphere. New York are trying to get it. It's not an easy thing in a big city like that.
Of course, yeah. But one thing that strikes me is that, I follow quite a lot of guys, particularly from the New York setup, and other teams as well in the league, is that Americans just do sports marketing so well. It just comes, they're just so used to it from being immersed in it the whole time.
Yeah,
The stuff is so polished. Like, I remember when Rugby United New York is the name of the team. Yeah. When that was launching, like the branding, everything, it would put Munster to shame, like just how good and on the ball they are. Like, it would put most teams in Europe to shame, really. They just get how it does, and I think that really helped to grow the market there.
It puts players to shame though as well in some ways. There, it can be a bit cringy, you know what I mean? The whole rah-rah.
Imagine the Munster lads, but I'm not doing that, you go.
Yeah. Pretty much. Like, they had, last season, they had a bunch of boys in Times Square with their tops off and some Santa hats on, and the shorts and socks, the game day shorts and socks. And
nobody knowing who you were.
Thankfully I missed that one.
Didn't think you'd pass up the opportunity to get your rig out now.
No, Paddy Ryan was flying the flag for that one. I let him do it.
No wonder it hasn't taken off.
they really throw themselves into that sort of stuff, and a lot of times it hits, but the odd time it can be a bit cringy.
And so the move home, obviously you're playing in a league that's in a really exciting period. You're playing with a team that's in a really exciting period as well. Why the decision to call it a day in the States and move back to y'all?
It kind of just made sense in terms of the World Cup being the finish of it, in terms of we'd bounced around a lot. As I said, we started in California, moved to Colorado and New York, and we did all that by car and all our valuables, 30 hour trips each one. Jeez. And stuff like that, and a dog in there somewhere as well. The moves are tough, you know what I mean? It's enjoyable and it's a great experience, but it's almost a young man's game. I'm not saying I'm old or anything, but to be moving around like that, it just doesn't make sense eventually. I just can't justify it, and especially with the wage that they have there now, it's improving every year, but it's not where it needs to be to justify that kind of a lifestyle,
particularly with a wife, like, right?
Exactly. Yeah, well. Yeah,
I mean, I think it's always far easier for a lad that moves for the purpose of sport, because you've got you've immediately got a circle of friends.
Exactly.
It's far more difficult for the other half in that situation,
for sure. And in terms of my career outside of rugby, kind of I wanted to get into the baking sooner rather than later as well. I was enjoying it and I wanted to kind of build on that. And then in terms of a family, we knew we weren't going to be there long term. Schooling is mental.
Is it? Yeah.
Expensive. Yeah, like, I have a lot of friends over there that have $100,000 loans going to be paying off for the first few years of their careers, and health insurance is pretty nuts. I had health insurance for myself, and it was $550 a month.
Oh.
And that was like, in terms of if you're going to have a family, it's going to be a lot more than that. So it's stuff like that we looked at, and it didn't really make sense. So it was about time to make the move on.
And how have you found the adjustment back to y'all?
Good, yeah.
I think from New York to y'all is probably as
similar, as similar landscape. Maybe the water's not as polluted in New York as it is in y'all.
The blue flag's coming back this year.
It's back, baby.
Yeah. The boardwalk now is heaving.
Did you lose the blue flag?
It was, yeah, for a minute.
It comes and goes every couple of weeks. It's in and out.
Depends on tides. I'm really enjoying it. It has very much been an adjustment. But one I'm enjoying, I kind of found out in New York that city living's not quite for me. Really enjoying it. It's nice to be around family again after bouncing around for 6 or 7 years, whatever it's been.
Yeah. And you've hung up the boots. Well, you haven't hung up the boots. You said they're resting, or how would you describe it?
They're just taking a little rest time. I'm not sure. This season will pass me by anyway, because I'm enjoying kind of waking up and not being sore.
I know that feeling, yeah.
I'll let this one pass me by and kind of reassess next year. And see where we go from there.
Right. Well, John, it's been great to see you, man. I think it's been six, seven years since I've seen you. So good to see you looking healthy, wearing questionable clothes as always. The very best of luck with the business back in y'all. And I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Yep, best of luck.
Thank you.